How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
The heel's good. There wasn't that much pain at all. Now it's about getting a rhythm.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by SeatGeek, Fantrax, and Basketball Monster. Well, today's show is not actually sponsored by SeatGeek, but I'll give them an extra plug anyway. Today's show is actually sponsored by Draft, a daily fantasy app where your chances of winning are almost three times better than on FanDuel or on DraftKings. Download Draft now or go to playdraft.com and enter the promo code LOFANTASY when you download the app to get a 100% match deposit bonus. Today's show is also brought to you by our Patreon sponsor, Jason Ellison. So thank you to Jace for sponsoring the show. If you want to sponsor the show through Patreon, head to patreon.com/redrock_bball. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And I suggest you go and follow me over there if you want to interact. You can do it via Facebook and Instagram also. We're going to talk about all of the three games that were on Tuesday. We're going to preview the 14-game monstrosity that is Wednesday in the NBA. And we're also going to break down a trade that we had, the Serge Ibaka-Terrence Ross deal. I'm going to talk about that. So
let's get to it.
Indeed, we will. Let's actually start off with the trade. So the trade goes down today. Serge Ibaka heads from the Orlando Magic to the Toronto Raptors in exchange for Terrence Ross and a fairly late first round draft choice from the Raptors going back to the Magic. I could spend half an hour talking about the Magic's ineptitude in their front office and what led them to this and all of the various trades that have gone down and maneuvers they've made and what they've ended up with, and basically every decision they've made has been wrong at every time throughout the last couple of seasons. You've heard me go over that plenty of times. On the surface, this deal, you go, okay, Terrence Ross for Serge Ibaka, it's not a good one. But forget all that other shit. Forget what they traded to get Serge. It's done. You're not getting Victor Oladipo back. You're not getting Domantas Sabonis back. Forget it. It's finished. Forget the fact that you traded Tobias Harris for Ersan Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings. Forget that. It's done. Serge Ibaka was either not coming back to this team, not re-signing, or you didn't want to have to pay him 4 years, $100 million, which would have been a disastrous contract anyway, I think. So you got back a player on a reasonable deal, a young player, Terrence Ross, who actually helps what this team needs, gives them some shooting, gives them a wing, and clears up the front court mess that enables Aaron Gordon to now hopefully play his preferred position or best position, and you get a first round draft pick out of it, where if you waited 3 months, Ibaka was gone for nothing anyway. So yes, you didn't get back the same value that you outlaid for Ibaka just 9 months ago, but something is better than nothing. And they're things that make sense. A shooting wing and a draft pick. I'll bash the Magic plenty of times, and I've done it many times, because they've been an atrocious franchise this season, the last couple of seasons. Curious front office decisions, even more curious coaching maneuvers, and that's still not out of the woods yet. But in terms of getting this trade, you're getting it done. It works out as a bonus, I think, that you get some value back for Serge. Now, as for the Raptors, fine. They needed a power forward. They got one. Terrence Ross was there. He was, I guess, superfluous, considering you've got a very good wing player that was the third string in Norman Powell. That first-round pick doesn't really mean anything. In the end, is it a win-win? Probably. It probably is. Now, the Raptors are a completely different story. We'll talk about them in a sec, because they are in a fair amount of trouble at the moment. But overall, the trade feels like a win. Now, let's get to what happens fantasy-wise. Let's talk about the Magic side of things. Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon moves across now to being... Well, actually, let's rephrase that. Aaron Gordon should, and I say should because Frank Vogel has displayed some idiotic tendencies this season, he should move across and play the four. There is the risk that Frank Vogel says, nah, Aaron, let's keep you at the three and play Jeff Green at the four. That is a risk. There's a risk that he says, let's keep Aaron Gordon at the three and let's play Bismack Biyombo, Nikola Vucevic as our 4-5. Disaster, but it's a risk. But everything that's coming out about why this trade was made, the hints of Rob Hennigan giving, yes, we've discussed moving Aaron to the four more, you would have to think that this pushes Aaron Gordon into playing the four more. And what that does for him is it should be a significant bump for his value. We know he's been a massive disappointment this year. But playing out of position, he's looked lost. And what we've seen from him is big drops in numerous rates. His rebound rate has dropped from 15 to 9%. Moving from the 3 to the 4, or back to the 4 from the 3, should enable him to be closer to the basket and get more rebounds. So his rebounding goes up, a boost in value. His block rate has dropped from 2.4 to 1.2%, so half his block rate. Again, play closer to the rim, be the rim-protecting 4, your block rate goes back up. Aaron Gordon's blocks should rise, increase in value. His true shooting has dipped from 54 to 50%. Closer to the rim, easier shots, increased field goal percentage, bump in field goal percentage, bump in scoring. Four categories looking at getting a bump here with Gordon. Now, maybe his threes decrease, but there's no rule saying you can't shoot threes as a four. Serge Ibaka did plenty of it, so maybe that changes. Maybe he doesn't get as many steals, not playing on the perimeter, but overall, there should be a significant boost to Gordon's value. Is he going to be a top 50 guy? That's a massive stretch. I don't think that's going to be the case. He should be able to push himself back into top 100 consideration with probably a top 75 ceiling outcome. But that's good enough to own. He hasn't been good enough to own for majority stretches of this season, but go and grab him now, and let's see how this turns out. Really good work there, or good value for him coming in. Unless they screw it up and play Jeff Green there, which we're not out of the woods with that sort of a decision. People have asked me, what does it do for Bismack Biyombo? The short answer is nothing. Biyombo and Vucevic playing together was a disaster, and it will continue to be a disaster. So I don't think that they go Vuce and Biyombo together. Biyombo stays in the role that is perfect for him, a 16-minute backup center role. That is as good as he is, and that is exactly what he should do. He doesn't start getting 25 minutes a night. He doesn't start playing next to Vucevic extended stretches. Nothing changes with Bismack. Jeff Green, Damian Rudej, I guess, would take on some of those backup 4 minutes from Aaron Gordon. And that obviously opens up a spot at the three. It moves Evan Fournier across to the three most likely. He could stay at the two. And I think Fournier performs better as a three. So that helps him, helps his efficiency, which was really high last season. So there's a spot open in the starting lineup. Could it be Mario Hezonja? Well, Frank Vogel hates him, so it's probably not, although he's shown some increased signs. You would have to think that Terry Ross just slides into that role now and becomes the starting wing. Now, Ross had been okay this season. He's hitting threes, he's getting steals, but that's really what he does. He gets steals, he hits threes. He doesn't rebound, he doesn't assist, he doesn't block shots. He's not big volume free throws or anything like that. Is he a guy to own? Sure. Is he a must-own guy? No, he's not, because he's giving you help in two categories. He's a borderline must-own guy. He can absolutely be owned, but again, we don't know exactly the way the Magic are going to run with this. But Ross has value. In a 14 team, you'd be snatching him up immediately. In 10s, I don't think that he's really got a place in 10-team leagues, but he has got a chance to hit 2.5 threes a game and potentially get 1.5 steals. And that can have use. But it's not a knockout, let's go grab Terry Ross everywhere. Watch your waiver wire. Who grabs him? Who did they drop? See if someone good becomes available, because that could be a possibility as well. Ross can score. He can hit some threes. He can get some steals. They'll be decent-ish numbers. They'll be okay numbers, but they won't be mind-blowing, break the bank, let's go grab Terry Ross everywhere. But I'm excited to see him in Orlando. I think it's going to be nice to see an extra guy that can shoot on that team. Unless they just go full knob and go, you know, DJ Augustine, CJ Watson starting backcourts, or Alfred Payton, CJ, whatever. There should be a clear starting five. It should be Payton, Ross, Fournier, Gordon, Vooch. It's sticking out like dog's balls to me, but that doesn't mean that the Magic are going to see that. So it is something we do need to be prepared for, that there could be some absolute dickheadedry going on in Orlando, because we've seen it happen plenty of times. But the value for Gordon rises, and the value for Ross obviously rises, but it doesn't push him into must-own territory. On the Raptors, what happens with Serge Ibaka? Well, his value takes a big hit because his usage will drop. He goes back to being not a guy that was taking over 21 shots per 100 possessions as he was doing this year. He goes back to being that guy that was 17, 18 shots when he was with Oklahoma City. Yes, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan aren't Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, but they sure take almost as many shots. So Serge goes back to being that third guy there. So he drops 20, 30 spots maybe in value. Still, you don't do anything in terms of dropping him from leagues, but his value takes a significant hit. I don't think that, you know, the thought process which I've seen out there, maybe it makes him concentrate more on defense and gets his blocks back. I think that ship has sailed. I don't think the shot blocking three shots per game Serge Ibaka is ever coming back. He's not a prolific rebounder. He's just going to be a lesser version than what he was in Orlando. The other thing that happens in Toronto is I think it hurts Jonas Valanciunas. Dwayne Casey is a very bad coach. I have mentioned this many, many times. Even when they were winning games and had this historic offense, he's a bad coach. He has outdated ideas on things that work. He has confusing rotations, and we saw it again today. And Valanciunas is going to cop it. He's going to lose some minutes. I've got no doubt about that. And almost invariably, it's going to be the wrong decision when he does that. So he is going to hurt. Bebe Nogueira is going to lose minutes too, and he goes from being a guy that had 12-10 ownership value and probably won't anymore. Again, I would like to give it a game to see how it plays out, but he's going to hurt. Patrick Patterson was not a 12-team league guy, and he's hurt anyway, but he's going to struggle to have value that's even approaching 14-team leagues in this situation. Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl will both likely be out of the rotation. The other common question I get is, is Norm Powell a must-add guy? Love Norm Powell, but no. He's not playing 30 minutes a night. Even on a night like this with Terry Ross out and no Serge Ibaka, you know, Powell played 18 minutes, and he played fantastically well. Casey just has a real issue with being able to utilize his best players. The other thing this does as well with Serge here is it limits what Damari Carroll can do in terms of playing the four, which is an option for Norm Powell playing more. You could say, all right, you can play Lowry, DeRozan, Powell, Carroll. That could be lineups, but with Ibaka in here replacing Siakam or Poeltl, the opportunity for Damari to play at the four is very, very much smaller. So that is not going to be a realistic situation. Norm becomes, you know, I really like Norm, and I think he is a better player than Damari Carroll, but it doesn't matter what I think most of the time. It matters what Dwayne Casey thinks, and what Dwayne Casey thinks is not the case. So Norm is going to find it very hard to have standard league value unless DeRozan or Carroll is out, injured, resting, hurt, whatever's the story. He just doesn't jump in. It doesn't just become a case where he takes Terrence Ross's 20 minutes and has his 6 minutes a game. That's just not the way it's going to work necessarily. Serge takes on some of those minutes and it trickles down that way. It's not as simple as we're just going to get, you know, 10 plus 20 for Powell, and now he's playing 30 minutes. I just don't see that working that way. And again, he played 18 minutes today. He provided super energy. He was fantastic for Toronto, but they don't utilize him as well as they should. So it's still more waiting time for Norm. He's still more a dynasty target. But if you grabbed Norm Powell, someone in your league might actually believe that he's going to be a 12-team guy. Try and sell him for some value if you can. I just don't see it happening. So that's the trade. Ibaka loses. Bebe loses. Powell gains. Ross gains. Gordon gains. Biombo really unchanged. So there are some moves that you can go and make in your leagues to try and get some value out of, but Let's see. Look, it's great that we had these trades. I don't really know how much it pushes the Raptors over the line because they're in a lot of trouble anyway. They had a stinking loss today to the Bulls. There's a lot of issues going on there, and they've got the pieces. I just don't think that they have someone who knows how to utilize them. And I've been very vocal in my criticism of Dwayne Casey, and that will not end until he shows something different. And he has not done that. Let's talk monstrous line of the night. DeMarcus Cousins. Yes, Boogie Cousins of the Sacramento Kings gets the monstrous line of the night in a very tight victory against the Lakers. 40-12-8 for Boogie. He hit two threes. He had two steals. He had a block. He was 13 of 24 from the field. He was a not very good 12 of 19 from the line. Just another big night from Boog. He's the 12th ranked player on the season and has actually increased his free throw percentage significantly this year, up to 77% from 72% where he was last year, averaging 28, 11, and 5, 1.5 threes. He's almost at a triple 1.5. He's got 1.7 threes, 1.4 steals, and 1.3 blocks. So he's not that far off a triple 1.5. And he's actually, you know, his turnovers are decently under control, apart from the last month where he's at over 5 a game, which is a huge amount. But Boog putting in some really, really good numbers. He's seen his field goal percentage drop recently, so hopefully that can revert. He's shooting just 43% across the last 6 games, including 25% from 3. But he has been a 36% shooter from 3 this season, so I'd expect that to go back up. But Boogie is your monstrous line of the night. All right, let's talk about today's sponsor, and that is Draft. I know you guys love playing fantasy because you're listening to this podcast. So why wouldn't you love playing daily fantasy on Draft? Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts, just like the one that we do at the start of a season. Set up your leagues and go alternating picks, you know, back and forward. You know how a snake draft works. I don't need to explain it to you. That's how Draft does it. So it's daily fantasy without a salary cap. It's not about everyone having the same player in their roster or looking up, oh, you know, 80% of people have got Darren Collison in their lineups. You can have each player once, and that is it. It's a snake draft. So it's a better way for you to play. It's almost 3 times easier for you to win money on Draft than it is on some of the bigger daily fantasy sites. You can play for free, or you can play for that money and put your knowledge to the test against friends or random people and take their cash and laugh all the way to the bank. So go ahead and download Draft either via your app store or head to playdraft.com. Download the app, and when you do that, enter the promo code LOFANTASY. That tells the guys at Draft that you came from listening to this podcast, but it also gives you a fantastic 100% match deposit bonus up to $600, one of the best match deposit bonuses in the entire industry. You put in $100, they'll give you $100. You put in $600, they will give you $600. It is a fantastic way to get yourself started on Draft. Use your knowledge, use the ease of setting up a league or a contest on Draft, and go ahead and dominate. But download the app and use that promo code LOFANTASY and get started playing Snake Draft DFS today. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Channing Frye. Lots of questions abounding about Channing Frye because he had a real monster performance. 21-10 for Channing, with 4 triples, 1 assist, 2 blocks on 7 of 15 shooting. He started in place of Kevin Love, who is now out for 6 weeks, and basically that means Love is dropped. Get rid of him in pretty much every non-keeper situation. That puts him out till the end of March, and that is when your fantasy leagues should be continuing. And if he comes back, and there are rumors that he won't even return this season, if he comes back, it's going to be the start of April, and he's going to be limited for the first little bit of time. Move on from Kevin Love. If you've got an IR spot, fine, hold him there. But as soon as someone else becomes IR eligible, Kevin Love can go. Now, Channing Frye, huge performance from Channing. But he played a lot of minutes. 33 minutes here, 21-10, 15 shots. A really big night. But let's look at the other times that he started this year. He's had 3 other starts. Back on the 1st of February, he started and played 22 minutes and had 18-4 with 3 triples. So a good night. 18-4 is good. But only 4 rebounds, so we must remember that. Back on the 4th of January, he played 13 minutes and had 15-5. Sorry, 30 minutes, not 13, 30 minutes, 15-5. Another decent night. Back on the 14th of December, he started and played 23 minutes and had 0-3. So Frye is fine to own. But this is the outlier. This is also not a massive outlier. But a 21-10 night from Frye is not commonplace. It's the second time that he has double-digit rebounds this entire season. In fact, he did not have double-digit rebounds the entirety of last season. So getting 10 rebounds at a Fry, consider it a fluke. He will hit threes. He can block some shots. He blocked two shots in this game, but he had only blocked one shot in his previous five games up to this one. And this was a weird situation with the Cavs. They didn't play Jordan McRae. They didn't play Kay Felder. Richard Jefferson only played 10 minutes when he had started, I think, two games ago when Love missed. Jefferson was the player that started and not Fry. Now, Fry, I think, is going to continue to start. But this is upper limits. This is ceiling for Channing Fry. Ceiling sort of production. Now, he can have value. He is a guy that is going to hit you 2.5 threes a game and probably score 13 or 14 points and do it with nice blocks and decent free throw efficiency. And that is valuable in pretty much all leagues. But again, watch an overreaction from some people, because there will be some overreactions from him to see who gets dropped if you happen to miss out on him. But I wouldn't have any issue adding him. But he turns into pretty much a Terrence Ross type, but substitute blocks for steals. His value is all coming from threes. Ignoring the rebounds today, which are fluky, it's coming from threes. That's where his value comes from. You know, slightly positive blocks, slightly positive free throws. His value comes from threes, which in a lot of cases can be streamed in, and or you might not need them. You might be punting threes. You might be dominating threes. So bear that in mind, that is going to be significantly his best category. It's his best category by a monster amount already this season. But it was a good performance from Channing to get the waiver wire line of the night. We are talking about the young gun of the night. So, of course, it's Karl Anthony Towns, 26-8 with 4 assists, a block and a 3, 11 of 19 from the field from Townsy, and 3 of 3 from the line. Just pretty stock standard stuff. He is the 5th-ranked player over the last 2 months, and averaging 26 and 12.5 over that time period. 1.5 blocks, 3.5 assists, 56 and 86. Great numbers. We know how good he is. Let's move on to the dud of the night. And it is a player who I'm not a massive fan of, as you've heard me say plenty of times, and that's Julius Randle. 11-7-2 for Randle. 1-3-5-11 shooting. I do not think that this guy is ever going to become a great player. I don't think he's ever going to become a good fantasy player. He's had weird stretches this year. He's the 109th ranked player for the season. He's ranked 228th over the last month. Should he be owned? In 12-team leagues, you would have to say yes. In 10-team leagues, I wouldn't be so quick to say, yeah, no, I got to own Randle. He's up and down. His minutes are up and down. He's not a solid contributor. And people will often, no, man, he's a triple-double threat. Is he? He's averaging 1.4 assists in the last 5 games. He's averaging 2.7 over the last 10. Yeah, he has had a triple-double. I grant you that. But he's not a great passer, and that part of his game has really fallen off recently. He's a piss-poor defender and really putrid at getting defensive stats as well. He doesn't hit threes. He's inefficient. We're talking about a guy that's true shooting is under league average, so that's not ideal, and it's dropped off badly. Yeah, 49% true shooting over the last month is bad. I don't think that Randle ever becomes a great player, and I think he might struggle to become a good player. For now, I think you just hold on to him in 12s, but in 10-team leagues, he should not be listed as someone who is a must-own, can't-drop type of a guy. I just think I think Larry Nance might be a better player than him. There are other options in LA, and Luke Walton obviously has absolutely no qualms about just changing things up every single game, which is becoming super frustrating, I'm sure, for fantasy owners and for Lakers fans, just with the constant chopping and changing of rotations and roles for guys. It's not ideal. So Walton does not get a pass as a good coach just yet. All right, let's move into these games now and talk about them in, a little bit more detail. The first game we look at was the Toronto Raptors and the Chicago Bulls. Kyle Lowry played 38 minutes, 22-3-4, 4 triples, 47% shooting, so it's really hard to complain too much about Lowry, except continually just playing too many minutes. It is going to bite them on the ass. It is going to bite him on the ass. And Dwayne Casey remains a terrible coach. Norm Powell, only the 18 minutes, as I said, but 13-2-4 with 2 steals was a fantastic night from Norm. But the absolute baffling bullshit of playing him 18 minutes and Damari Carroll 40 minutes is nonsensical. It's ridiculous. but that's where we are with Toronto. Carroll played 40 minutes, had 4 and 6 with 3 steals, took only 4 shot attempts, hit one of them. Yet Damari can be owned in, I think he can be owned in 12-team leagues because we're seeing the minutes up there. Now, whether I agree with the minutes or not, it doesn't matter because that's exactly what's happening and he's getting the minutes and the production's all right as a 12-teamer, but not fantastic. Whereas my boy Jonas Valanciunas, just 22 minutes. Again, bafflingly stupid. 12-9 in 22 minutes for JV. Not much else happening there, but it wasn't like anyone else was doing great stuff at the center position. It's not like the Bulls centers were tearing it apart either, with the exception of big Chris Felizio. So really weird stuff. He just doesn't know how to utilize the center with offensive talent, Dwayne Casey that is, and be prepared for a hit for him. Corey Joseph played 28 minutes. We always need to see 28 minutes of Corey Joseph. They ran 3-point guard lineups at times in this game, the Raptors, and they were down big until they fought back late. 10-4 for Joseph in his 28 minutes. And we had the first appearance of DeLon Wright for the season. I'm a big DeLon Wright fan. You wouldn't have heard me talk about him much this season because he literally hasn't played. But I think, or when he was drafted, I went, oh yeah, this is great. He's moving into a backup role. Lowry could walk in a couple of years. Lowry's getting older. They'll groom him for 2 years. And then they signed Corey Joseph and then limited him. But if you look at back at the end of last season when Wright was getting some extended minutes, the numbers are impressive. And I think that he can be, or he could be, a very useful fantasy contributor if he found himself in a role with enough minutes. It is not going to happen here. I don't know if he's jumped back into the third string point guard role over Fred VanVleet. He should, but I don't know whether he has. So he's going to struggle to have any sort of impact this season. Poeltl started. He had 4 points. That's cool. DeMar DeRozan had 18, 5, and 3 in his 38 minutes, but it was a terribly inefficient night from DeRozan going 5 of 19 from the field. Not 8 of 9 from the line is a good return, but obviously that field goal percentage was a disaster. While Bebe Noguera had 7 and 3 in his 25 minutes, no Jared Sullinger playing again. I don't think he's going to be part of the rotation at all moving forward. On to the Chicago Bulls. Jim Butler returned, which is good news because as I talked about yesterday, this is the time where he generally misses a lot of time of the year. So he's back and that was good. 19, 2 and 12 with 4 steals. He was putrid in terms of shooting, 2 of 10. But did get to the line 19 times and hit 15 of them. The problem there is he got to the line so much, he just didn't hit enough of them to have a real big impact in that category. Yeah, that 78 or 79% is just marginally above average. So it's not a huge, it could have turned into a huge night from Jim, but it didn't. They were without Nikola Mirotic, Dwayne Wade, and Paulie Zipser. So Doug McDermott played 32 minutes. He had 20 and 5 with 2 threes. He inexplicably smashes the Raptors every time he plays them, much like the Bulls, who have now won 11 straight against the Raptors. I wouldn't be putting much faith in Doug, while Chris Felizio had 10 and 6 in his 27 minutes. The front court, I don't know what's going on there. Robin Lopez, only the 21 minutes, 8 and 6, while Taj had 14 and 4 in 27 minutes. Lopez and Taj, you should consider them expendable in 10-team leagues and even in some 12-team formats. Jaron Grant and Michael Carter-Williams were the starting backcourt. Jaron Grant, I think it's going to be tough for him to stick. 15 minutes for 2 points with a steal and a block, while Carter Williams, he played 29 and went 8, 5, and 3. Now, Carter Williams has put up good numbers with Wade and Butler out in the past, but if they make the change and Grant goes to the bench and Carter Williams remains starting, it won't be the same Carter Williams. It'll be low usage, 26-minute Carter Williams, stand in the corner and let Jim and Dwayne handle it, and then his value, it won't be there to be used. But he's been okay. Rajon Rondo also hit 63% of his shots, including 2 threes. Yeah, I know. 12, 3, and 4 for Rondo in 24 minutes. Leave him for the deeper leagues at this point. While Bob Portis had 6 points in 11 minutes and still just looks like he doesn't know what he's doing for the majority of the time that he's out on the court. Cleveland and Minnesota, LeBronald. 40 minutes for LeBron, of course. Why wouldn't you play him 40 minutes when you've got an 8-point victory against Minnesota? Something is going to give. Whether that is resting or whether that's an injury, he just is playing so many minutes. He's going to have a big uptick in usage, I would guess, with Love out. But interestingly in this game, and this is another reason why I'm not super ridiculously high on Fry, is that Fry took more shots than LeBron. 15 shots to Fry, 14 to James. I'm not sure that happens all that often moving forward. Kyrie had 27 shots. He had 25, 1, and 7 with a steal, a block, and 2 triples. And that's more realistic. He's going to get a big usage bump. While big Tristan Thompson should see his rebounding rate increase 14 and 11 in 35 minutes for Thompson. Nothing changes for Kyle Korver. He plays 27 minutes. He had 6 points, both threes. That's where he's at. While we had Iman Shumpert returning, having 9 points all from triples in 26 minutes, he was not on a minutes restriction, so don't think that that's why he played those minutes. But they didn't put DeAndre Liggins, Kay Felder, or Jordy McRae into this rotation at all. So it was a weird nine-man rotation they ran, which it could be extended further. Derek Williams played 23 minutes. A lot of people excited about Derek Williams, not really sure why. 13 and 6 in 23 minutes. Remember, Derek Williams is a player that sucked at every team he's been at. He was so bad in Miami that they had nobody healthy, and he still couldn't get playing time after they just signed him this season. He might have a decent role on Cleveland with Kevin Love out, but he's not going to be 12-team league worthy. He'll have a couple of games where it makes you go, yeah, you know what? Yeah, maybe. But in general, he just won't. He can score, and that's really about all that he does, and he's not going to do it in big enough volumes to justify ownership in majority of formats. For the Wolves, Lance Stephenson hurt his ankle, and he went down, and you would have to think with his contract expiring, his 10-day expiring over the All-Star break, if this is a severe ankle injury, which it looked relatively severe, we don't know yet, you would have to think he's not coming back. But that remains to be seen. Brandon Rush went back and played the bulk of the minutes, 37 minutes for Rush. That's sort of what I expected initially, and that didn't happen. But now the minutes keep creeping back up. 6-4 for Rush in those 37 minutes with two triples, a steal and a block. Chris Dunn played 9, Lance Stephenson played 3, and Tyus Jones did not play at all. So we're seeing Thibodeau go back to Rush just playing these minutes. Still just a deeper league sort of a player. Rick Rubio had 5, 8, and 16 with 2 steals, and Wigo had 41 points. It was a very empty Wiggins line though. 41 points, just the 3 boards, 2 assists, and 1 steal. But he hit 4 threes, he went at 55% from the field. So a good night from him, but it wasn't that well-spread performance we'd seen plenty of times, but it's very hard to disagree with 41 on 55% shooting. It's still a fantastic night from Wiggins. Gorgui Dieng also had a nice 12 and 10 double-double. The last game of the night was the Sacramento Kings and the Los Angeles Lakers. Willie Cauley-Stein chimed in with a little cameo, 8-3 in 15 minutes with 3 steals and a block, but he's far from being a consideration guy, while Ty Lawson was out. And I imagine that Lawson sits out just until this All-Star break is done. Darren Collison played 40 minutes and had 13, 5, and 8, a clear must-own player, while Benny McLemore again looking decent, 13-3 with 3 triples. While Lawson and Temple remain out, McLemore can have 12-team league value. When Lawson and Temple return, and Caspi to a lesser extent, it's going to be hard for McLemore to maintain that role. But as I always say, who's ahead of him? It's Aaron Aflalo. He's terrible. Garrett Temple, not much better. Omri Caspi, useless-ish. Ty Lawson, not good. So there is a chance that he can stick in a bigger role. I just don't have full faith in that happening. But McLemore looks a different player. McLemore looks the player that he was turning into at the end of his second year until George Karl ruined him in that third year by giving him zero faith and 0 minutes and basically playing him out of a job in the NBA until he sort of resurrected himself now. So, yeah, good stuff from McLemore. I do like McLemore. I think he can be a guard that is a really good rebounder, get some steals, hit some threes, and scores. And yeah, I like where it's going. Not a 12-team, must-own, must-grab guy, but in this situation with these guys down, he's having some short-term value. Matty Barnes had 5, 6, and 3 with a triple one in his 27 minutes. On to the Lakers. Lou Williams got ridiculously hot and some trade rumors coming up about him being moved. 24 minutes for Lou, 29 points, 4 triples, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. A ridiculously hot performance. Trade. If someone wants to give you a top 50 player for Lou Williams, please do it immediately. I talked about Larry Nance before. He played 24 minutes while Julius Randle played just 21. 8, 6, and 3 for Nancy. 3 steals and a block. He is clearly the superior fantasy option to Randle. If they were to play equal minutes, you would take Rance every minute of the day. But whether that's going to be the case remains to be seen because Luke Walton has no consistency with what he does. He brought Timofey Mozgov back into the rotation for 10 minutes a day and limited Ivica Zubats to just 10 minutes. Nick Young goes from 29 to 20 to 29 minutes game by game. Jordy Clarkson goes from 17 to 28 minutes, and he played 28 here and went 9 and 7. D'Angelo Russell was benched down the stretch and played just 23 minutes, 8 and 2, with 2 steals and 2 threes. I still think you want to hold on to D'Angelo Russell, but just infuriating coaching decisions and rotational decisions from this team at the moment. Not convinced Brandon Ingram's good. Not convinced Brandon Ingram's ever going to become good. He's still young, so he's got a lot of time, but he's not good at the moment. 27 minutes, 6, 5, and 4. And again, until you can prove that you can actually shoot, you can't shoot. And he can't shoot. 29% from the field and 25% from the line is an abysmal showing, including another air ball from the free throw line. So that's two air balls in about a week from Brandon Ingram. Really can't see the point of having him in a standard league just at this point. And even in dynasties, his value might be significantly overrated. I'm just not fully on board with Ingram. He's got a long way to go. I could very easily be... I'm not writing him off. I think he's got decent upside. I'm just not fully on board with Brandon Ingram just at this point. All right, that's all the action from Tuesday. There were only three games. I'm going to take a break, and then we're going to switch ourselves into DFS mode because there are 14 games on Wednesday. An absolutely horrible, horrible scheduling situation from the NBA. 11 games, 3 games, 14 games, 2 games. Just a ridiculous scheduling plan. No idea what they're thinking, but we've got to deal with it. So there are 14 games, and I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about all the action that is coming up on Wednesday. All right, guys, let's talk perfect DFS lineups from Tuesday. On FanDuel, Rick Rubio at 38.6 and Darren Collison at 26. The shooting guards, Norm Powell at 24.4 and Lou Williams at 42.7. At small forward, Jim Butler at 43.4 and Wigo at 49.6. The power forwards, Channing Frye, 38.5, Larry Nance, 24.7. And at center, Boogie at 66.4 for a total of 354.3 points, and that cost all $60,000. On DraftKings, Jordy Clarkson had 23.25 and Norm Powell had 25. Jim Butler, 47. DeMarcus Cousins, 72.5. Channing Frye, 42.5. Lou Williams, 45.25. Andy Wiggins, 51.75. And Dougie Mack at 28.75. That total was 336 for a total of the full $50,000. Now, as I said, we've got 14 games on. So there's a lot to talk about and a lot of options are going to open up. Thankfully, we don't have too many things in terms of, is this guy going to play? Is this guy not going to play? Which is always a nightmare. But we'll get stuck straight into it with talking about the first game up on the slate. And that is the Indiana Pacers against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 6. We don't know if Lavoie Allen is going to play because he missed that last game with a knee problem. If he is out, then it opens up Kevin Serafin to being an option, as we saw in that last game. Thad Young is out, by the way. So he's going to miss another game and, heal up over the All-Star break. Let's talk point guards. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
He is at 7,200, has struggled a little bit in the last couple of games, but has got a tremendous record against Kyrie Irving. So I'm here for Jeff Teague here. I think this is a good spot for him. He's averaging almost 40 points the last three times he's taken on the Cavs, and at 7,200, you get 40. It's absolutely a fine gamble to take. That's the best way of putting it. On DraftKings at 7,400, I don't love that. Higher price, lower budget, not loving that so much. Kyrie at 8,400. His salary's dropped by 600. We know he's going to get a significant usage boost. So I do like him at that price. That's not an exorbitant price. He had 41 today. Yeah, he could easily have a 50 on the Pacers. So yeah, like Kyrie here as well. At shooting guard, Iman Shumpert at 30. There's not many cheap shooting guards around. So 3,900 for Iman Shumpert. It could work out. Someone has to take some extra shots on the Cavs. It won't necessarily be Channing Frye taking the second most shots every time. So Shumpert is just a GPP guy, but he could have a game where he hits 3 threes and gets 3 steals and has 4 or 5 assists. That can happen for Shumpert. So bear in mind that he is an option. I don't hate Rod Stuckey either. He is at 3,600 and he's a brilliant $3,000 on DraftKings. He played 21 minutes in the last game and had 25 DraftKings points, and that's value. But that's a GPP-type upside play as well. And you could also look at Monte Ellis, who's getting extra minutes, and he also comes in at sub-$4,000 on both sites. So Monte has some upside as well, amazingly. Kyle Korver at 4,000, strictly GPPs, and you wouldn't want to go too much further than that. Paulie George at 8,400. It's a $400 price rise for Paul. I'm not fully on board with that. It is a good matchup, and opposition small forwards against LeBron have put up good numbers for the majority of the season. So I think that Paul George should absolutely be in your GPP player pool. And when we look at him on DraftKings, he comes in at 7,900. That looks like a tremendous situation for him. Not locking him in, not a core player by any stretch, but I do like Paulie at those salaries on the respective sites. As for LeBron, 11,300 feels a little bit high with so much other value on the slate. Wouldn't want to spend that. He's at 10.5 on DraftKings. That's a little better, but I think you can do better. Look, LeBron is only averaging 50 points in the last five on FanDuel, and at 11.3, I probably want a little bit more, and I can definitely extract more value on this sort of a slate than using LeBron. At power forward, Channing Frye is going to be used in lots of different lineups. He's at $5,000 on FanDuel, so it's a significant price. Yes, he had 39 points today, so you know, you expect him to beat that. But it's not an absolute no-brainer lock-in in every type of situation for Channing. He's at 5,000 on DraftKings as well, the exact same story. Fine, but doesn't become a core player at that sort of price tag for me, because I do think that replicating that performance from today is probably going to be a little bit tough. Derek Williams at 4,100, I'd love it if it was minimum. At 4,100, maybe, but I'll probably say no in most cases. And Kevin Seraphin, he gets the bump at minimum salary, assuming that Lavoy Allen is out. At center, Al Jefferson is a minimum salary player as well. Yeah, don't really see it for Al. But if Lavoy is out, maybe he has a decent game, but it'd strictly be a GPP type of a scenario. While Miles Turner at 6,400, not getting that value, bad matchup, I would leave Miles alone. At 59 on DraftKings, he's a little bit more appealing, but still definitely not a center that I'm falling over myself to grab. Tristan Thompson would have been great, but he's at 6,400 on FanDuel, so that's a no for me. But at DraftKings at 5,500, there is some use in Tristan Thompson, especially with his increased ability to get double-doubles and rebounds now that Kevin Love is out for the foreseeable future. All right, let's crack on to the next one. It's the San Antonio Spurs and the Orlando Magic. We don't know. We don't know what is exactly happening with this team, because we don't know if Terrence Ross is playing. We don't know if Frank Vogel will use common sense or if he will use Orlando common sense. Those two things are very much different entities. So we don't know what Vogel is going to do. Plus, they come in against an extraordinarily shit matchup. They did beat the Spurs last time on the road. Now they take them on at home. The Spurs are still favored by 10.5, and the total is 205 points here. Let's talk point guards. Tone Parker's at 4,300. Not many cheap point guards around either. So Tone is a guy that you could have a look at as a GPP guy. I really, really don't love it, but he's absolutely got GPP upside. He could get you 28 points, and that might work, but 4,300 is maybe making it a little bit tough. Lord Alfred Payton had a monster in the last game. He's at 5,900. Do we have faith in him? We absolutely do not. But we know that in unlikely scenarios, he drops 40s. So he should be a GPP guy as well. Even in this matchup, you can talk about the Spurs defense. They aren't a great defense against point guards. Point guards are still able to accrue their points when you take on the Spurs. So he has some value there. Pat Mills, no. Shooting guards, Manu, Dan Green. They're guys that you would look at just as GPP type of options. That's really about it for those guys. CJ Watson probably remains starting. He put up a stellar 4.5 points in the last game. I don't think we want to really look. You could take a flyer on him, I guess, as a GPP point guard if they say he's starting, just in case. But I wouldn't feel awesome about it. At small forward, Terrence Ross. Here we go. He's at minimum salary. We don't know if he's going to play. We don't know if he is going to start. So that's why I'd label him as a GPP guy. But that salary is very low. Even at the best of times, Terrence Ross is a GPP guy because he's up and down. He's inconsistent. But he should have an increased look at a bigger role here. And that could really help him. So if we hear that he's playing, especially if we hear that he's starting, I'd like Terrence Ross at that salary. I forgot to mention Evan Fournier before. He's at 5,500. I actually really like Evan Fournier at 5,500. Lots of value in him there. At 59 on DraftKings, not so much. Aaron Gordon at 4,500. Again, it comes down to, will they start him at power forward? Or will they go Jeff Green in the starting lineup? Because if they do Jeff Green, Gordon I'm not 100% sold on. But at $4,500, he should be looking at 25 plus points. At 46 on DraftKings, the same. 27, 28 points could come his way. I would really like it, assuming that those things fall in place. And if there's anything we've learned from this season, it's not to trust or to have faith in Orlando. Kawhi Leonard is at 9,900. Surprisingly piss poor form against Orlando, averaging under 31 points the last three times. Some of that's blowout related both directions. But Kawhi's on a fairly significant heater at the moment. He's averaging over 50 in the last three games. The matchup is a nice one for him. You shouldn't have any reservations, especially when you head to DraftKings and you look at him at 8,900. LaMarcus Aldridge, he is at 7,300. He has been atrocious, and I ripped into him fairly significantly on the last podcast. I won't do that necessarily here. 7,300, do not like. 6,300 on DraftKings, yes. Yes, I do. That should be a 30 burger coming his way against Orlando and really got upside for 40 or 50. We know he's got the upside, but at 6,300, I think he can even be cash usable. At the 73 on FanDuel, he's probably just a GPP type of a player. Dave Lee, yeah, look, he's putting up good numbers, but he's just not getting consistent enough minutes, especially at 50. No, that's not true. Not getting enough minutes. He's getting consistent minutes, just not enough minutes. At center, Dwayne Dedmon's at 4,300. He had 21 in the last game. If you want to buy into a revenge game situation, here it is. He's back at a home arena that he used to call home for multiple seasons. At 4,300, the minutes are there. The production's been good. Shouldn't hate using Dwayne Dedmon. At 46 on DraftKings, your love should drop a little bit, but it's not terrible. While Nikola Vucevic at 7,300, the matchup is relatively nightmarish, but I don't think that he's someone to 100% avoid. I like Vuce here. I do not like Bismack Biyombo unless we hear that they're going to start running them together. Then I would say, yeah, Bismack at 3,800, hey, take a flyer. But in common sense land, which the Magic don't always operate, yeah, Biyombo doesn't strike us as being a great option by any stretch. All right, let's look at the next game now. We've got the Charlotte Hornets and the Toronto Raptors, another game with uncertainty. The Raptors are favored by 6.5. The total is 213. We don't know if Serge Ibaka is going to play. All indications are that he will, but we don't know that yet. And Patrick Patterson, we don't know if he'll... I would be stunned if Patterson plays. He has been medically cleared, but he's dealing with pain. So they said, look, until you're pain-free, don't play. They could play him this one game, risk a setback, or they could just say, take it off and take the next 2 weeks off and then come back after the All-Star break. And I think that's what they would likely do. So I wouldn't be counting on Pat playing. At point guard, Kyle Lowry, 8,500. Really good matchup for him going up against Kemba and the Hornets. He should be in play in most formats, whereas Kemba at 7,600 got back on track in the last game. 44 points. He's got a very good record against Toronto. So despite Lowry having a reputation, and not just a reputation, like a statistical backup of being a good defensive point guard, Kemba should be someone that we look at here. I think he has use, absolutely. Corey Joseph at 3,500, nah. Don't think DeLon Wright gets into the game here. DeMar DeRozan, another one we can use, 8,700 for DeMar. He'd want to come back after a pretty disappointing performance, and he's got the matchup that definitely goes in his favor. At 79 on DraftKings, it's a brilliant price. Lowry, by the way, is 8,000 on DraftKings. Both of those guys, they look at being really, really good options. In terms of stacking them in GPPs, I'm not 100% sure that's the best way to go, but I don't hate playing them both in cash games and getting decent production out of both guys. Nick Batum at 7,400. The matchup for Batum is a negative one. He has been pretty good, but he hasn't been $7,400 good every game, which is what he's at FanDuel, and he's even higher on DraftKings. So I'm not 100% in, and by not 100%, I mean I'm out on Batum. I don't think this is a good spot for him. Norm Powell, love what he did today. Yeah, 24 points in at 3,900. Will he get more minutes? Hopefully he gets more than 18, but if Ibaka plays, that's minutes coming away from him again. So not fully into Norm, but a GPP option, of course. At small forward, Damari Carroll at 42. I like that. He played 40 minutes today, only put up 19 points because he's terrible. But if the minutes are going to continue to be there for Damari, then he's going to be an option. 4,400 on DraftKings. Again, he's an option. He's not a lock. He's not a core guy or anything like that. Kidd Gilchrist and Ballinelli, hard to use those guys. At power forward, Marvin Williams is 5,100. He had been playing well until now. He averages 15 points over the last three games, including a 9-point turd in the last one. Is he worth looking at? Yes, it's a positive matchup for him. Projections do seem to really like him here, just based on he's reverting back to averages. The matchup is a good one. I wouldn't be going all in on him. I love it on DraftKings at 4,700. I think there's tremendous value there. And he's got a good record against Toronto as well, which does mean something. So I'd be okay with getting Marv into multiple GPPs. Cody Zeller is out, so Frank Kaminsky will start at center again. FanDuel has bumped his price to 5,800. He's averaging 30.5 over the last three, so 5,800 doesn't exclude him from being used. He's at 6 on DraftKings. Again, doesn't exclude him from being used, but it takes away a ton of the value that we had from him prior to that. Serge Ibaka at 5,900. I think it would be not ideal to use him, even if he plays. In cash, that is. In GPP, sure, because I think a lot of people will steer away. But when a new team, what's the odds of him coming out and blowing through that relatively high price? I don't think they're all that high. He's at 68 on DraftKings, which is basically an absolute nightmare. I wouldn't be looking at him at that sort of a salary. Jonas Valanciunas is at 5,900. Really worried about him, so no. And Bebe, same story. Okay, let's talk about the next game now. We have got the Dallas Mavericks and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 5, and the total is 201 points. Darren Williams was ejected in the last game. He should be right to go, but I would imagine a minutes limit is still in place there, so he will play probably first half. Yogi Ferrell plays second half, meaning both of them are going to be really, really hard and almost impossible to consider using. The Detroit point guard situation... Reggie Jackson played decently in the last game, but it only gave us 26 points in 31 minutes. He's at 5,400, and I just do not see the likelihood of that being a good price. Ish is at 4,300. Again, not for me. So the point guards in this game, pretty much a write-off. Yogi Ferrell, you know what? He put up 28 points in the last game, played 31 minutes in that second half in place of Williams. But he's priced at 5,600. You'd have to be pretty ballsy to say, you know what, I think that Yogi in half a game is going to be able to exceed that sort of price tag on a regular basis. So to me, Yogi Ferrell is not someone that I will be using. On DraftKings, he's a little bit more appealing at 4,700, but I'm still not fully on board with it because they could decide to say, you know what, Darren Williams' minutes limit is 25 in this one, and then Yogi plays 20. And it would be a real struggle for him to get that sort of value in that situation. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been a disaster recently. He's at 4,900, but you always have to respect the GPP upside of him, while Wes Matthews at 6,000 has been cranking out nice numbers, not high upside numbers, but nice numbers nonetheless. And he's not the worst cash game sort of a play. He does have some value. It does have some value in cash game scenarios. Seth Curry is struggling, 5,400. In this matchup, I would not take Seth at that sort of a price. The pencil Harrison Barnes at 6,200, that's on FanDuel, that's too high. But on DraftKings, he comes at 5,700. And I think that is a good play for the pencil over there. Doesn't need to do a huge amount to get that sort of value back at that much reduced salary. Marcus Morris at 58. You never know what you're going to get with Marcus. He does have a good record against Dallas. He's got 36 in his last performance, not against Dallas, just in general that last game. But again, it took him 40 minutes, which is pretty standard for him. I don't think that we need to. I think you'd look at him as a GPP type of guy, and that's really about it. At power forward, the tackle box, John Lua had a big game in the last one. Shit matchup, inconsistent player, not interested. Whereas Dirk at 5,800, I like Dirk. Who doesn't like Dirk? But I mean, just in this matchup, 55 on DraftKings, you shouldn't have too many concerns about using Dirk. I feel pretty good about him. Not necessarily a tournament, but I feel pretty safe with him at the moment in cash, which is a good thing. I don't feel safe with Toby Harris, who is as up and down as they come. He's at 5,500. I think that he is a fade in all sorts of all formats. Andrew Bogut is out, so we're going to get some Salah Mejri minutes. He's at 3,900. Andre Drummond is not always the best defender. 3,900 for Salah Mejri, he becomes a GPP play. As for Drummond, always GPPs only for him. He's at 8,600. The slow pace of this game turns me off, so he's not going to be a strong GPP guy, except on DraftKings, where he comes in at 7,600, and that is a really good price for him. So that I wouldn't stretch it to cash, but he would be in a lot more GPPs at that sort of that sort of reduced salary. All right, let's head to the next one now. Milwaukee and Brooklyn, the Jason Kidd Bowl. The Bucks are favored by 5.5, and the total is 220.5 points. Trevor Booker is questionable for Brooklyn. Now, if Booker can't go, it's going to mean that we see some more Luis Scola and hopefully some more consistency for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. But I would not hold my breath on that. At point guard, it's a nightmare. We've got Dally, we've got Brogo, we've got Dinwiddie, we've got Whitehead. Who knows who's going to get more minutes from game to game? The answer is literally nobody knows. So fading Brogdon, Dally, you know, Dinwiddie, Whitehead, not that you'd be using them, it's the smart way to go. You could take a punt on someone like Brogdon in a GPP. You could take a punt on someone like Dally at 3,800, which is a very cheap price. But in terms of being able to say, I feel confident about this guy getting more minutes, you're absolutely fooling yourself because nobody can predict that shit. At shooting guard, Yanni is at 10,800. It's a lot for Yanni at the moment. That sounds dumb to say, but he's not getting those numbers. He had just 25 in the last game. Yeah, it's a really good matchup for him, but I would restrict Antetokounmpo to a GPP-only type of player until further notice, just really struggling to get the sort of big numbers that he was putting up earlier in the season. Chrissy Middleton's at 4,300. Not enough confidence to consider rolling him out on this packed slate of games. Randy Foy, Shaun Kilpatrick, just a GPP guy, but I have zero faith in that. He goes from 25 to 17 minutes at the drop of a hat. Really hard to rely upon that, I think, as a regular thing. Mick Beasley at 4,900. They've bumped his salary by $600. Rightfully so, because he had 40 in the last game. He will not shoot at 77% like he did in that game. So expect somewhat of a drop-off. But I would also expect that he should go a fair distance to being able to exceed that sort of salary. On DraftKings at 5,500, he's more of a lukewarm prospect. But 49 on FanDuel is a very nice price. Bojan Bogdanovic is at 4,400. You know the story. GPPs only for him. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I'd actually include him as a GPP guy, especially if Booker can't go. He's averaging 24 points over the last three, Rondae, at 4,500, which is not a bad return. But just knowing when that's going to come is the tough part. At power forward, Thon Maker is a minimum salary player. He is starting at center until further notice. He is not putting up great numbers, but this is a good matchup for him. So Thon at minimum salary absolutely should be in your GPP pool. At 3,400 on DraftKings, the same story. Centers. Brook Lopez, 7,200. Good matchup for him. He's been putting up solid numbers, but I'm not sure 7,200 is fantastic. DraftKings has him at 6,700, which is a much better price. I'm definitely fine with using him on DraftKings, whereas Greggy Monroe crushed in the last game, dropping 49 points against the Pistons. He's at 6,500. I would expect over a fantasy point per minute for Monroe because that's generally what he does. It's all about getting minutes. It's a tough sell to use Monroe in cash, and I think that I would want to restrict it to tournaments just because the coach's name is Jason Kidd. But if you head to DraftKings where he's at 5,400, I feel pretty good in cash about him even being able to achieve that number. That's not that big a number. The extra $1,000 or $1,100 that he's saddled with over on FanDuel makes him a tougher sell. Still a lot of games to go, guys, so you want to pause the podcast, go take a piss or something, grab a drink, do so. It'll be right back here for you, waiting for us to continue the rest of the games. Philadelphia and Boston. The Celtics are favored by 9.5, and the total is 217. So it's time to talk about Jahlil Okafor because he has rejoined the team. After being told, you know, Jar, you're done, you're traded, you're shaking hands with everyone, you're not coming with the team because you're being traded. Now he has flown up to rejoin them, and sources are saying, not my sources, reporters' sources are saying that he may actually play in this game. So if you've got hands, throw them up, throw them above your head. Just go, what is going on with this team? Just pull the trigger. What a nightmare situation. Not only to have all this going on for the season, but for them to say, you know, Jahlil, mate, just take a seat for a bit, say goodbyes to everyone, go home, relax, we'll have it all teed up. And then to get a phone call, so you know what, Jahlil, mate, maybe can you come back? As he walks back into the locker room, they go, mate, didn't we just say goodbye to you? Yeah, sorry, I'm back. Ah, that's awkward. Just a shit show. Just get it done, Colangelo's. Get something done. Nightmare. I still feel he's going to get traded, but this absolutely reduces the likelihood of it. It is being really, really reduced due to some sort of level of incompetence. I'm not sure where to direct that comment, but there's some incompetence somewhere if he is now back rejoining the team. Let's talk point guards. TJ McConnell is at 5,600. He gets one of the best matchups in the NBA for opposition point guards. 5,600 is not a high price for TJ. He's averaging 32 across the last three. There's always a marginal risk with him, but I don't think it's that big. Go ahead and knock yourself out. 5,100 on DraftKings is a beautiful, beautiful price for TJ. Isaiah Thomas continues to drop. He's down to $10,000 on FanDuel and 94 on DraftKings. The 10,000 on FanDuel puts him back into GPP conversations. The 94 on DraftKings would make him cash usable to me in a good matchup for him. 9,400 is getting good for cash. Yeah, not that 10-5 ludicrousness that we were seeing from him earlier on. Any other point guards to discuss? No, there is not. Let's talk shooting guards. Marcus Smart is playing sensationally well, but his salary doesn't give you much room for value. He's at 5,800 on FanDuel, so I don't really love that. 57 on DraftKings, the same thing. Yes, he's averaging 35 points over the last three. Yes, Avery Bradley is not back. Yes, Smart is playing well, but I'm still not feeling it as being a great option. Source Castillo is playing well off the bench for the Sixers. He's at 4,100 and he's averaging 23 over the last five. If you're really struggling and need some cheap shooting guards, I'd feel pretty confident in the level of production that Stauskas is giving you at the moment and go, okay, get your 23 and feel decently good about it. And at 3,900 on DraftKings, it's a little bit better over there as well. At small forward, Bob covers at 6,400. Marginally negative matchup here. Oh, actually not significantly negative matchup for him against Boston. 6,400. There are other better options out there. And I'd say the same thing for Jay Crowder, who has to take on Bob Covert. 6,100. Both those guys are very good defenders. So that writes both of those off, in my opinion. Now, at this point, I'm assuming that Jahlil isn't playing and Nerlens Noel is going to get minutes. He's at 5,600 Nerlens. So I love that. But if Jahlil comes and they say, sorry, you're back, Jahlil, you're playing and you're starting, not only will I smash myself in the face multiple times, but I would not use Nerlens Noel. Now, on DraftKings, Noel comes in at 6,100. That makes him a tough sell, even if Okafor is not playing. But on at 5,600 on FanDuel, it's a fine price. Rashawn Holmes is GPPs only. Dario Saric has got to be in consideration. At 5,300, the guy's averaging 38 points over the last three, really putting up some big, big numbers as Ersan Ilyasova continues to slide. So I would consider using Saric in most cases. He's up to 58 on DraftKings. That makes it a harder sell. That makes it more GPP orientated to me after a $600 price rise for Saric. But it's not, it's not a complete write-off, I guess is the best way of me phrasing that. At center, Kelly Olynyk, do we trust it? The answer should always be no. But at 4,600, he's averaging 28 over the last three, 30.5 on DraftKings over the last three. The ease matchup is fantastic for him. Will Stevens go to him three games in a row? All signs point to no on my Magic 8-Ball, but you got to consider him a GPP guy. Al Horford at 6,800, the price continues to come down because it was too high for months on FanDuel. His production's nowhere even near that 6,800 mark, but the matchup is a good one for him, so I would consider him a GPP guy. And he's now at 6,800 on both sites, so DraftKings sort of lagging a little bit behind, but I would still consider him a GPP option. All right, let's now head into the next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 8, and the total is 206 points here. Let's talk point guards. Mike Conley is at 7,700, really putting up some consistently good numbers, and nothing should change here. It's a good matchup for him taking on Jrue Holiday. So Mike Conley should absolutely be in play in most of your lineup. 7,500 for him on DraftKings. Jrue Holiday is at 8,100. I would rather take Conley. Not only does Jrue not have to face Conley's defense, but the price is a fair bit cheaper. So it's too high. I'll leave it at that. It's too high for Drew Holiday in this sort of a scenario. Now, Drew comes in at 75, the same price as Conley over on DraftKings. So that's a consideration. Who would I rather take? I would rather take Drew in a GPP and Conley in cash. How's that for sitting on the fence? I'll just pick those splinters out of my ass and we'll move on to the shooting guards. Tyreke Evans had a good game in the last one. 25 points. He's at 4,500. Do I trust that happening again? I absolutely do not. I don't have any faith in the way that Elvin Gentry is going to use him. Etwan Moore also had a solid game, but his upside is not high enough to really deal with the downside of owning him. And Bud Heald and Tony Allen just aren't high priority guys. Small forwards, it's just a bunch of yuckness. Chandler Parsons, Solly Hill, Vincey Carter, Jimmy Ennis, like none of these guys should be interesting to you. Terrence Jones has already been ruled out, as has Dante Cunningham. At power forward, Anthony Davis, 10,900. No problem with Davis at that price. He's averaging 51 over the last five games. The matchup is somewhat of a negative for him. Taking on Marc Gasol, that is a concern, but it hasn't really impacted him too much over the last few times he's played them. He's at 10,000 on DraftKings. I don't think you should have any real fear of using him. Zebo at 6,000, no chance with Brandon Wright coming back into play now. Same thing for Jermichael Green, really hard to consider using those guys. What about Marc Gasol? He's at 8,400 on FanDuel. Feels too high. Marc Gasol at 7,500 on DraftKings? Absolutely. I think there's value in Gasol at that price. Alexei Zinsser could also start again. I assume he starts with both Cunningham and Jones out. He is a $3,000 player on DraftKings. He had 10 points in the last game, so it wasn't a great return. But a starter at $3,000 who can actually put up numbers, they nearly always come when Davis is out, but he can sometimes put up numbers. Not a horrible multi-lineup tournament option. Someone did ask me what GPP stands for the other day. Multiple people asked me. GPP means guaranteed prize pool, and it's a tournament. It's the ones where the top 17 to 18 or 20%, 12% get paid on a sliding scale. The cash games are double ups, are head-to-heads, where the top 50% of the field gets double their money back. You put in 10 bucks, you finish in the top 50%, here's 20 bucks. GPPs are the large field ones. You finish first, you win $10,000. You finish second, you win $3,000. You finish third, you win $1,000. Graduated down like that, you finish 100th, you win $12. You know, down like that. So that's why in those tournaments, it's not the top 50% that get paid. It's the top 17%-ish. And the higher you get, the bigger payout you get. In cash games, you want reliability because you got to beat half the field. And if you beat half the field, whether you come first or whether you come in the 49th percent, you get the same payout. So you want consistency and low and high floor. In a tournament, you want high ceiling because you want to get up to the pointy end. You want the big money. So you're playing all for upside. So that's the difference. That's when I say GPP, that is exactly what I mean. All right, next game. The Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 9.5, and the total is 222 points. Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson are both listed as probable, so they should be back in action. Joshie Richardson is out as well for the Miami Heat. He should be returning after the All-Star break. Ah, quick note. If you're any people still listening to play seasonal leagues, Jeremy Lin will be back. First game back after the All-Star break. Own him. Add him. Has to be owned everywhere. Go and add Jeremy Lin. Has to be owned absolutely everywhere. So he'll be back in the first game after the All-Star break, which is great news. Let's talk point guards in this Houston-Miami matchup. Tyler Johnson's at 5,700. He's been putting up some solid numbers. I'm not sure how high his upside actually is. Not a strong play to me. While Pat Bev at 5,700's been playing well, very well lately. It's a negative matchup. The salary for Beverly has risen, so I'm not 100% all in on him. But I would look at him as a GPP guy, whereas Goran Dragic is at a very high price, 7,900. The production hasn't been living up to it, and now he gets Beverly. So to me, that is a big no-no for Dragic. Shooting guard Jim Harden, 12,200. It's a very big price. He's got a decent record against Miami, but it is expensive. If you don't have Jim in your lineup, don't feel like you're doing the wrong thing, because there are so many. There's only two teams not playing, the Wizards and the Bulls, I believe. So there's only two teams not playing, so you can find value in multiple other spots. So I don't think having Jim is an absolute necessity. Eric Gordon's at 5,500. That's a no-go for me. And Dion Waiters. Dion Waiters is playing well, but he's also not playing at $7,100 well, so I would be fading the shit out of that. Is it 7,000 on DraftKings? Still not really interested. It's just too high for Dion Waiters. The variability with him, and the variability is too high. The upside is too low at that salary. Trev Ariza is at $5,500. Been putting up some decent numbers. I'm not fully into it in this matchup. I think you can do better than Trevor Ariza. Power forwards, Ryan Anderson, you know the story, 4,700 GPPs, and that is literally it. Whereas Jimmy Johnson at 6,400. Jim, averaging 36 over the last three. He is our savior. He is our only son, but is this a good spot for him? I'm not convinced that it is. I think you can do better than Jim with 14 games out there. So not a strong ad for me. Clint Capela, I do really like. 5,200 for Clint. Hopefully he gets more than the 18 minutes he played in the last game, but I imagine that he will. I think it's a solid spot for him. I would also wouldn't mind chucking Nene into a GPP on DraftKings only, where he's at $3,000. He's at 43 on FanDuel. Nene at 3,000, I could see that happen. Hassan Whiteside at 8,800 just feels too expensive, and I think that is a fairly easy fade for me in most cases. Next up, let's talk Los Angeles Lakers. They're taking on the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix. The Suns are favored by 4, and the total is 226.5 points. Let's look at the point guard situation. D'Angelo Russell's at 5,900. That is a fade until further notice. And then the opposition point guard, Eric Bledsoe, he's in a great spot. He's at 8,800. Now, that's a little bit high. 8,800 for Bledsoe. You're going to need 45 or 48 against him to really bring value home. Is that possible? Yes. Is it likely? Probably not likely enough to use it in cash games. Bledsoe, if we look at him on, what's the other side? On DraftKings, he comes in 8,600. So still not an ideal scenario. But GPP play for him on both sides. Jordy Clarkson at 4,500, strictly GPP, but I don't feel that great about it. Devin Booker at 6,600, love the matchup for Devin. This should be one where he could be pushing 40 points here pretty comfortably. I do really like this for Devin Booker. At 7,200 on DraftKings, I'm less interested in it. He is averaging 41 over the last three. I'm less interested. I would consider it GPP, but I still do like Devin Booker at that sort of a price tag. Lou Williams at 6,100, he annihilated them today. Can he do that again? Well, the matchup's not a tough one, but expecting 30-plus points in 22 minutes, which is what we expect Lou to get, it's pretty tough going. So I think that using him in cash game is fairly suicidal. Uncle P is always a GPP type of an option as well. At small forward, man, TJ Warren, who knows? He had 2 points in the last game, so that was a disaster. He's at 4,500. I have zero confidence in that. And PJ Tucker's at 48. Also, don't think there's enough upside to really consider him. Brandon Ingram and Luol Deng for the Lakers. Let's just write off the small forward position in this game altogether. At power forward, Larry Nance. I like what he's doing. He's at 4,300. Had another solid game today. Averaging 26 over his last five. Why not? Easily get in there. Low ownership. Get the value back and have an ability to go bigger. I like that from Nance. Marquise Chris is at 3,700, strictly GPPs. He's as up and down as they come. I don't even know how high his upside is, but the matchup is a great one. So he could actually go off for 30, 35 here. So I think Chris becomes a GPP option, mainly based on the matchup. Julius Randle is too expensive for the sort of shit that he chucks out most of the time. And at center, if it's a Zubats, Tariq Black, Tyson Chandler, I feel good about exactly zero of those players. Zubats at 3,800, maybe I would look at him as a GPP guy, but he played 10 minutes today. He could easily play 23 in the next game because that's what he'd been doing previously. But it's Walton, man. Shit happens and changes all the time. And it's really hard to be able to predict it and keep on top of it. All right, let's go to this next one. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's the Denver Nuggets, it's Towns, it's Jokic, it's strap yourself in time. There is no spread released for this one. Wilson Chandler and Emmanuel Mudiay are both listed as questionable. Fareed and Arthur are out. Mason Plumlee is ready to go. which is good news, obviously, for the Nuggets. For the Timberwolves, there's no injury concerns that we have at this stage. Let's talk point guards. Apart from Steph Curry, point guards do well against Denver. So Rick Rubio at 6,800, you have to like the spot for him. He's giving you 39 points a game, basically, every time he goes out there at the moment. So really good spot for him. You have to be impressed with Rubio. Now, at 7,300 on DraftKings, that's probably getting too high, and I would like to go in a different direction, but I do like it on the other site, whatever it's called. FanDuel, that's the one. At point guard, Jameer Nelson's at 5,300, averaging 36, but if Moutier plays, it's a little bit harder to use him at that $5,300 price tag. On some of the other sites, he's much lower. DraftKings, he's higher. He's at 6,000, so that's almost a write-off even if Moutier happens to be out, and we wouldn't be using Moutier even if he was ready to go. At shooting guard, Brandon Rush is at minimum. We saw him play some minutes today, 37 of them, in fact. It gave us 15 points, so it wasn't a great return. But you could do worse than considering him in your GPP pool. Gaz Harris at 51, better options out there than Gaz, and Farton Will Barton at 64. Big game in the last one for Barton. Subsequently risen, the price has risen by $600. That makes it not ideal. He's at 73 on DraftKings. That feels like Fade City. Small forward, Wilson Chandler's at 66. I don't know if he plays. If he plays, I like it for Wilson. I don't love it, but I like it. But we don't know. And Wiggins at 7,900. Had a crusher today, 50 points. Averaging 44 across the last five, but at 7,900... Where's your upside? Is it actually there? I'm not sure that it is. His floor is pretty good. He's averaging 35 over the last five. The defense is not a concern. I wouldn't feel totally against using Wiggins, even in cash, but I think that you can do better. Shabazz Muhammad's production has really dropped off recently. Power forward, 5,600 for Gorgie Dieng. Don't expect much upside, but for cash, he's fairly solid. And how about Nikola Jokic? $11,000 on FanDuel. That is a $900 price rise. That's probably getting a little bit too high for me. Love Jokic. You know that I love him. He's averaging 56 over the last five. So there's no reason that you can't consider him, but it's just pushing a bit high. DraftKings, though, no worries. $10,300. Get it in. I feel good about him getting 50-odd points. Hasn't done well against Towns the last couple of times he's played him, but I still think that he's absolutely worth a look on both sides, but more so DraftKings at that price. That price is getting real high on FanDuel. Juancho Hernan Gomez is at $4,000. He put up 45 in the last game. If we see Wilson Chandler ruled out, then let's go with Juancho, but Mason Plumlee will be in, so that might take some of his playing time away. At $4,000 in a GPP, you would absolutely be considering him. Even if Chandler is in, or if at time of lock you don't know if Chandler's in, you're putting him in at 4,000 is fine. They've bumped him to 4,600 over on DraftKings. That's not appealing, but it would be appealing if we hear Chandler's out. At center, Towns at 10,400. His numbers have been okay, but they haven't been really smashing through that $10,000 barrier. So, yeah, on this day, he definitely has value. But he's not a lock in every case, but I still think he's one of the better centers out there. Mason Plumlee at $6,000. I think he'd be pretty risky to go and throw him in there, especially considering I expect him to have a lesser role than he's had in Portland. And he's averaging just 25 points over his last five games with Portland, which is not at the $6,000 mark at all. So I think it would be an extremely risky play to get Mason Plumlee out there. All right, where are we at next? The Portland Trailblazers, Mason's former team, against the Utah Jazz. This is screaming nightmare because it's the Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 8.5, and the total is 205 points. Yusuf Nurkic is playing in this game. At point guard, Dame Lillard, 8,200. Not only is Dame inconsistent, now he has to take on the Jazz. Let's leave Dame as a GPP guy, and even then, not a strong one. I think you can do better than him in most situations. Georgie Hill has also struggled. He's at 5,900. Again, look elsewhere. At shooting guard, there's not a lot to love here from the Utah side. Alec Burks. You could throw Alan Crabb into a tournament. He's a minimum salary player who's getting some extra minutes. It doesn't really matter, though, because he's averaging 12 points in his last three games in 27 minutes a game. He's just not a high producer. And CJ McCollum comes in at 7,900, which would be fine if he wasn't taking on the Utah Jazz, which is just going to stifle him. He's at 74 on DraftKings, so it's getting a little bit better. But I'm really not feeling him as being a player that I would be, let's lock in and go with him. At small forward, Joe Ingles at 3,600, tournament maybe, and Gordo Hayward at 77, I think is definitely worth a look at that sort of a price tag. He's at 73 on DraftKings as well. There is some definite value there. While Mo Harkless had 35 in the last game, he comes in at 4,600. A little bit of a risk associated with him. He's not the most consistent performer, but I don't think that you should be steering completely away from Mo Harkless at a sub $5,000 price tag, especially considering Al-Farouq Aminu is doubtful, and he likely won't play. So that's going to put Mo across to the four a little bit more, and that opens things up for him there also. Noah Vonleh, does he get some extra minutes? Will he do anything with him? No. So why did I bother mentioning him? Derek Favors at 5,000, too risky. And Myers Leonard looks like he will start again. He's at minimum salary. He was disgusting, and it's a shocking matchup for him against Rudy Gobert. So starting him sounds like just the worst idea you could possibly have, but I think that that's what Terry Stotts is going to do. Eddie Davis at 3,800, GPP. I wouldn't mind having a crack at him because Nurkic isn't that good, and Leonard is terrible. So Davis, who had 32 in the last game, is someone that I would look at those really cheap prices. Now, as for Nurkic, he's at minimum salary on FanDuel, 3,900 on DraftKings. I wouldn't have full confidence in it, but I'd feel pretty good about deploying him in most cases. Even if he gets 23, 24 minutes, he should be able to beat back that sort of a value. But he's got a couple of things against him. A, he's not good. B, he's playing for a new team. And C, he's going up against Rudy Gobert. So there's a fair few negatives associated with him. As for Gobert, 7,700, great matchup. Really think this is an opportunity for him to put up a real monster. 74 on DraftKings. You know, can't really see too much wrong with using Rudy Gobert. Let's move on to the next game. It is the New York Knicks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 7 points. The total is 218.5. Remember, it's Lance Thomas's revenge game. Injury-wise, I think we're pretty good in this one, so that's always good news. At point guard, Derrick Rose, $6,000. I don't mind it, actually. Westbrook's not the best defender, although recently it's been a little bit harder for point guards to score against him, so we give him that tick. So Derrick at $6,000 is okay without being strong. I think you can do better than him. As for Russ, 12,400, much like what I said with Jim Harden, there are so many other options out there that you can find value at other positions without having to load up on big cash plays necessarily. So I'm not sure that Russ at 12,400 is or should be considered a lock in any sort of situation. Brandon Jennings looked like he's back to the bench now, so no. Shooting guards, Vic Oladipo really stunk it in the last game. 6 points. He's at $6,000. You can do better than that in most cases. I'm not really interested in Vic. Same with Courtney Lee, who did have a solid game, but the $4,000 price tag and limited upside does not get me all that excited. Andre Robertson had exactly 0 points in the last game, so that's a good indication of what he is. $8,200 for Melo. It's okay. I wouldn't be looking at that as being the savior to my lineup or anything along those lines. For the power forwards, he's looking much better. 6,800 though, so FanDuel's gone, yeah, he's looking much better. Take the price rise. And you go, okay, that's not ideal. But he's still putting up some okay numbers. Not standing out to me as being a good player. And at center, I think there's some value here at center. We've got Joakim Noah out again. Steve Adams at 6,100. He'll want to bounce back up after a subpar game. 59 on DraftKings. Fine to use him. Kylo Quinn at 4,400. Even in a backup role, O'Quinn can exceed that sort of value, so he is fine to use. And Billy Hernan Gomez is at $5,700. Not so in love with 57. DraftKings is at 5,000, so that's really good. But the usual Hornacek caveat applies. He might not know what he's doing, and he might see 2 minutes. He might see 32 minutes. Like, we just have no idea what he's going to do with Hernan Gomez or really anyone in that big man rotation, unfortunately. So it makes them all a little bit risky. The Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors, Klay Thompson said that he is playing, and then about 2 hours later, the Warriors came out and said that he is questionable. So at this point, I've got him listed as probable. Klay said, I'm definitely playing, I'm fine. The Warriors said he's questionable. Shaun Livingston is also not on the injury report, so we expect him to come back. So let's obviously check back to see what's going on, but some disconnect between Klay and the medical staff maybe at this point. Let's talk point guards. Let's talk Steph, who obviously struggled mightily in that last game. He's taking on the Sacramento Kings now, so he can easily bounce back. 9,200 to Steph. He'd been putting up some good numbers before that. I don't think you should be overly scared about using Steph. In fact, I think he's a very, very good option at that sort of a price tag. You know, 3,000 less than Russ. Like, Steph's averaging 54 the last three times he's taken on the Kings. I think this is a good opportunity to use him. Darren Collison is now at 5,900. If Ty Lawson is ruled out, let's go with him. If Ty Lawson is in, that is a fade. 6,900 on DraftKings.
Giggity!
That's probably pushing it. I don't think I'd want to use him, even if Lawson is out at 6,900. That just feels way too high. At shooting guard, Benny Mack at 4,100. GPPs really boosted if Lawson is out. Otherwise, it's a hard sell for me. And Pat McCaw and Ian Clark are going to go back to insignificant bench roles with Klay returning to the lineup. As for Klay, 6,900, we know what he's done against the Kings in the past. You should have zero confidence in Klay Thompson as a cash play. You should have zero confidence in his floor, but you should have confidence in his upside, so that makes him a really good GPP play. At small forward, Kevin Durant, 10,100. Really like this for Durant. 50 points should be coming his way. I feel all right about it. While Barnesy, Matty Barnes at 5,100. I think he can do better than Matt Barnes at 5,100. He's at 5,100 on both sides. I think you can do better than that. At power forward, Draymond is at 8,100 on FanDuel, which is all right, but I really like the 7,500 he comes in on DraftKings. Some real value there. He should be looking at 40+, given the way that the Kings give up points to power forwards very, very easily. So like him on FanDuel, love him on DraftKings. Will Cauley-Stein, Anthony Tolliver, really hard to get excited about any of those guys. JaVale is at 3,600. He takes on Boogie. That could be ugly. JaVale has some upside in GPPs, but GPPs only. As for DeMarcus Cousins, 11,100 for Boog. Yes, Warriors do restrict option centers. Yes, I also think Boogie is the exception to that. So I wouldn't have too much of a concern with Boog going out there and taking on the Warriors. I think that he is fairly matchup proof most of the time. The one time he's not really matchup proof is when he takes on Gobert. That's the one. Or Ingmar Gasol is the other one that's somewhat of a concern. Not necessarily the play style matchup ones, which is what the Warriors tend to come across as. The last game of the night, this has been a marathon, is the Atlanta Hawks and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 2.5, and the total is 213 points. Thabo Sefolosha is questionable. If he is out, we're going to see way more Tim Hardaway Jr., as we've been seeing. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder is at 6,500. Too expensive for Schroeder. The matchup's not brilliant. He's been good, but he hasn't been that good. And Austin Rivers at 5,200. Love the matchup. Love the fact that that salary is dipped. I think that Austin is definitely worth a look on both sites at that $51 and $5,200 price tag that he's got. Hard to rely on Ray Felton at the moment, so he is a pass. At shooting guard, JJ Redick and Jamal Crawford, strictly GPP upside plays, that is it. While Timmy Hardaway is now up to $6,000 on FanDuel and $6,000 on DraftKings. Yes, he's been putting up good numbers. If Tarbo's back, I can't see why you would use him. If Tarbo is out, I think he has some value in GPPs, but I don't feel that confident about Tim in cash games, about him being able to do this on a consistent basis. At small forward, Kent Bazemore is always a GPP guy. He put up 29 in the last game and played almost 40 minutes. So it was a really nice performance from him. The Kings' small forwards are terrible, obviously. Paul Millsap at 8,100 had 50 in the last game. I really like the spot here for Paul. He's been putting up good numbers against them in the past. He's putting up some decent DFS numbers recently. I also like Blake Griffin a lot. At 9,800, he's been crushing and putting up some very, very big numbers. So I like Blake and I like Paul. At center, we've got Dwight, we've got DeAndre. Howard comes in at 7,300, had a monster in his last outing. Really, really big night, 50-point performance against the Blazers. It's not quite the same matchup, or it's far from the same matchup here against DeAndre. I think that that is not a great spot to go at. And same with DeAndre at 7,700 taking on Dwight. I don't really see the love in that sort of a matchup either. All right, let's head on to the picks of the day now before we get out of here. On FanDuel, Rick Rubio at 68, Kyle Lowry at 85. Shooting guards Iman Shumpert, 39, Devin Booker, 66, and DeMar DeRozan, 87. Aaron Gordon, 45, Gordie Hayward, 77, and Durant at 10-1. At power forward, Maker at 35, Noel at 56, and Millsap at 81. And the centers, Nurkic, 35, Capella, 52, and Towns at 10-4. On DraftKings, Stuckey at 3,000, McConnell at 51, and Lowry at 8,000. Dan Green at 37, DeRozan at 79. Small forwards, Aaron Gordon, 46, the Pencils at 57, and Durant at 97. At power forward, O'Quinn, 43, Aldridge, 63, and Towns at 10-2. And at centre, Kelly Olynyk, 43, Steve Adams, 59, and Nikola Jokic at 10,300. On to Moneyball now. Jameer Nelson, 45, Kemba, 72, and Eric Bledsoe, 87. At shooting guard, Middleton, 38, GPP, of course, Evan Fournier, 53, and DeRozan at 89. Beasley, 4,000, Bazemore, 5,000, Durant, 10,600. Power forward, Channing Frye, 37, Kaminsky, 52, and Griffin at 93. And at centre, Nerlens Noel, 5,000, Adams at 65, and Jokic, Adams at 61, sorry, and Jokic at 95. On draft stars, Stuckey's at 5,450, McConnell's at 8,500, and Lowry's at 15,800. The shooting guards, Barnes's at Matty Barnes, 7,750, Austin Rivers, 8,750, and Jimmy Harden, 21,100. At small forward, Beasley, 5,450, Fournier, 86, and DeRozan at 14,950. At power forward, Kaminsky, 75, Marvin Williams, 96, and Jokic at 14,850. And at centre, Channing Frye, 72, Stephen Adams, 10,400, and Paul Millsap, $14,050. We are done here, guys. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jimmy Butler.